From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, never mind that it's the Thursday between Christmas and New Year's. For the Dice Men, it's just more game time.
It sure is. It's just another day in paradise.
That's right. And in the office, which is today, our Edge Radio studios. It's 99.3 FM here in Hobart, or streaming out live over the interwebs or via your podcast medium. We are here, the Dice Men Cometh, to talk to you all about board games, card games, tabletop games, role-playing games, and all other games that you might be playing during this holiday season. Now, Garth, I have been taking the opportunity to play a few games in this sort of little gap that I've got between Christmas and New Year's before I go back to work on the 2nd. And so far, after finishing work on the Friday, the, what was that, 21st?
Yeah, my son's birthday. Happy birthday, son, for last week.
Oh, yes, happy birthday, Finn. So I, with my my partner, Sarah, and also a couple of these I played with my son, Toby, we have played This War of Mine.
Ooh.
Everyone got killed at the end of the first chapter. Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. First Martians. We've started one of the campaigns, which is very exciting. We played Chronicles of Crime. We played a couple of games of the game The Game.
Ah, The Game.
It's a card game. Really enjoy that as a little filler. We played Tanto Quarre, where we served some maids.
Oh, you finally got that to the table.
Yeah. We played Jaipur in the New Sydney the other day, as well as another little one, Blood of an Englishman, which is a two-player where you're either Jack or the Giant. And we played Carcassonne a couple of times. We played Bonanza. I think that's about it. We've got a new one of the exit games, the Antarctic base one, lined up as our New Year's Eve activity.
Woo!
So we've got lots and lots of gaming happening. We're going to go out to dinner and then come home and play an exit game to see in the new year.
Oh, doesn't that just sound beautiful? Well, I'm not going to tell you the games that I've been playing, because Ooh. Part of what we are going to talk about tonight is not just what we've been playing, which is really what I've been playing, which was really what I was playing when I was at LFG's Essen Unplugged.
Yes.
You're going to also give us some news, including something particularly exciting.
Oh, yes, it's an exclusive.
For something that happens between the states of New South Wales and Victoria at a certain time of long weekend, celebrating a monarch of some kind. We're going to have then break talking about Christmas games and party games.
Yes.
Because after the show last week, we went and played a few party games, and then not just because you've been playing all those games with your partner and child, I've been playing some games with my children and occasionally partner and other people as well.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot to get through.
So many games.
You might have noticed that Leon's not here. You might not notice, but Leon is not here. I'll just go, hello. That's probably what he sounds like. I never listen to him. So look, it's episode 244 for those of you playing at home. It's the 27th of December, but dates and shows don't really count at this time of year, because you're either working or you're probably not working. But the Dice Men are here to keep you up to date with all your gaming goodness. So we will start all that after a song.
And specially dedicated to Leon. Hello, Leon.
Hello, I'm Colby Dauk, studio manager at Plaid Hat Games, and you're listening to The Dice Men Cometh.
There you go. Especially for Leon, that was one of the loves of his life, Kate Miller-Heidke. She likes it better when he's not around, here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. And Garth.
Yes.
You're going to tell us about a game you played quite recently.
That's right. Only a matter of month ago? I think that's when I was in Canberra at Essen Unplugged. It feels like so much has happened since then. But one of the games I did get to play was Wildlands by, let's call him friend of the show, Martin Wallace.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
We've reviewed quite a few of his games. He's very kindly been able to get a few of his games sent to us for review, which is wonderful.
Mm.
Not this one yet, but you never know. So Wildlands by Martin Wallace and published by Osprey Games is, in not very Martin Wallace-y style, a multiplayer card-driven asymmetrical skirmish minis game.
And now, when you say all that together, firstly, none of that sounds like Martin Wallace to me. But then when I look and see the playing time is 30 to 60 minutes, so like Martin's lost his mind.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And, you know, he might tell you that that's happened as well. But he probably won't, because he's a bit of a board gaming genius. I think there's no denying that. I don't think we really need to list any of the games that he's played. No. Designed. So anyway, there I was. I think it was Saturday morning or Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Rocked into LFG's Essen Unplugged at 10 o'clock and found a table where, fortunately, someone had already pre-organised me a seat. So thank you, Ella, because she'd got me a spot at the table where Martin was demoing Wildlands. He was at LFG's Essen Unplugged, courtesy of Osprey Games. So he was there to show off his wares, and particularly Wildlands. And we were able to play it. I was able to play it with three other players. This is a 2-4 player, as I say, skirmish miniatures card-driven game. But Martin walked us through it. He did the rules explanation, demoed, and then basically sat there and watched us play for the whole time. So
okay.
That was quite intimidating, I must say, to watch the designer of the game be... He was right next to me, sitting next to me.
Yes.
And go, Martin, how do I do this? I know you just explained the rules really, really well, but...
I wasn't listening.
But I must have been listening really well because I won, so that's okay, but we'll get to that. So what is this game? I've explained it to you already.
Yes.
It's a miniatures, skirmish, fantasy game, but the blurb in the rulebook says, "The great darkness rose up to destroy the world," and it succeeded in a way. It sought absolute control, so turned its focus to the arcane crystals which powered the empire and which many believed had created life itself. The good, then the brave, and finally the powerful confronted the darkness, and one by one they fell. After the final battle, only a few weary souls remained, and the darkness smiled. A new order was within its grasp. Then in a final desperate act to prevent their magic from falling into the hands of evil, those few souls cracked open the crystals, and a wave of raw magic was unleashed. The darkness was obliterated, and the old world with it. The capital city shone brightly, then imploded. The mines rumbled ominously. The roads were deserted. The bridges fell. With neither its rulers nor its spells intact, the Empire's collapse was sealed in an instant. The arcane crystal shattered, sending shards far and wide across the landscape, shards of raw magic scattered across a wild and dangerous new world, calling out to those who might need them.
Right.
So that's not in itself particularly unique.
Yep.
Fantasy stuff, the world's all turned to... bit unsavory, and essentially
shards of things to collect.
Yes, everything's gone a bit charred. And the four players in this game will each choose rival factions.
Mm-hmm.
Each faction is made up of five team members, and it's really just a big old fight. It will be the first player to get to 5 points will be the winner. You will get a point for dealing the final point of damage to a foe.
Yep.
You will then take that miniature off the board and claim it as yours, and that's 1 point. Or you will be trying to claim your crystals. Every crystal you claim, that will also be 1 point. First to five wins. It does say 30 to 60 minutes. I think you would have to play a very long or very slow game to get it to 60 minutes.
Oh, really?
Because this game plays quick.
Okay.
Let me tell you how that plays.
Yeah.
You're going to start by choosing one of the sides on this double-sided board technology.
Hey.
There is an outside side and an inside side. So one is sort of wastelandy, cavey style, yep. And the other one is sort of a bit more, almost more fantasy medieval style looking. You choose your teams. They are the guild, which are your mages, so they're the powerful spell weavers and casters. But inherently, each little character is quite weak.
Ah.
So they're strong from spell point of view, yep. Weak from a physical taking damage point of view. You've then got the nomads, G-N-O-M-A-D,
yes.
Which are the gnomes, and they're yep. Sort of your tinkery technology your type people. You've got your pit fighters, which are, you know, I guess really your gladiatorial style yep. Bunch of misfits. And then you've got your lawbringers.
Ooh.
Now, they are thematically a sheriff and a deputy from a town when it all turned to crap. Had to decide what to do with the prisoners. Should they just leave them locked up? Should they let them go? And they decided, no, we'll conscript them.
Ah.
So you've got the sheriff and a deputy. You've got a drunken minotaur.
Is there a judge?
No, there is not.
I am the law. I bring the law.
There's a satyr in there. So anyway, you've got your teams. You're going to then seed the board. There's this one deck of 42 cards, numbered creatively from 1 to 42, which happens to be the number of spots on each side of the board.
Yes.
Each player gets 10 cards, and you'll choose 5, and they're going to be the 5 spots where your characters will spawn.
Mm-hmm.
You then pass the other 5 cards to the player to your left. You'll receive 5 cards from the player to your right, and the cards that you receive, that's where you'll have to place your 5 crystals.
Right, yes.
So that's how the board is seeded. That's pretty much it. You then draw 7 cards, which is your starting hand, because this is a deck-style hand management game where each individual faction has its own unique deck of 30 cards, and they are unique.
Yeah.
They will have a different combination of the various abilities in each card, and I guess you've got cards that can be movement, melee attack, or heavy melee attack, doing double damage. You've got the same thing, range and heavy range. You've got an area of effect attack, which basically targets the whole one of the 42 tiles that you're aiming for.
Yeah.
You've got fly, if you happen to have a character that flies. You've got rally, which if you happen to have a character who can inspire a fellow one on their team, you'll be able to move them as well. Yep. You've got shield, which is very important in this game. And then you've got cover. Cover is also very, very important because one of the really cool things about this board, and you look down and it all looks very nice, each little space has a circle and a number inside it. If there's a, I think it's a black circle, that means that square is kind of a cover square.
Okay.
So if you happen to be in that square and be getting attacked, you can play a cover card and essentially block the damage, which is really, really cool.
Oh, cool.
On that note, really quickly, the board also handles line of sight really nicely because all you have to do is if one point of the circle of the square that you're in can see the circle of the square that you're targeting, you've got line of sight. If you can't draw a line from the circle to the other circle, then you've got no line of sight. The circles are obviously randomly placed in different parts of the square to make it interesting. That's cool. There's also some objects within each squares like boulders or debris or rubble that sort of affect that. So that's kind of nice as well.
Yeah.
So you're going to start your turn by drawing up to 7 cards. Then you're going to take your turn. Your turn will always start with you at least revealing one of your characters. So it's flipping over whatever one of the 1 to 42 cards you want to, placing your chosen character on the board, and you can choose to reveal all 5 straight away if you want to, or sort of drip feed it and do one at a time. Then you get to start playing as many cards as you want.
Ooh.
Now, that's really quite cool because you'll have your cards, and along the left-hand side of them, they'll have the 5 different symbols for the 5 members of your team.
Yeah.
They will then have a certain action that each of your members of your team can do. So they might allow you to defend or attack or fly or shield or whatever of the abilities that you have.
Yeah.
And then some cards down the bottom will also have a big banner. And that just means it's a card usable for any of the members of your team.
Okay.
Basically, what you're going to be doing, though, is running around laying some smackdown on your opponents or running to your crystals and trying to snap up one of those. And we'll do that a bit quickly.
Yeah.
The way you're going to do that is you're going to have to play 3 cards from your hand that have the symbol of the character that you're using.
Yes.
You get into the square the crystal is, play 3 cards of, say, for example, there's an owl in there, so it's got an owl face. Success. You play those, you get your crystal.
Okay. So it's sort of like a super turn.
Kind of like a super turn.
You're using all 3 cards for 1 action.
Yeah, but you're going to be siphoning through cards quite a lot, so we'll get to that. The other actions are the fighty ones. So you'll move, and you might want to move again, and you might want to keep moving, and then you want to lay some smack down, and you want to do that. And that's all good and well, because typically people don't have a lot of health. So when I was playing the guild, all bar one of my characters had 2 to 3 hit points.
Ooh.
So pretty weak source.
Yeah.
One had 7. But because it was the first game and none of us had played it before, I managed to put my brute in the worst possible position, which
really?
Was tucked away in a corner a long way away from any of the action. So basically for the whole game, he did nothing. But doesn't matter because I won. So you're going to start with 7 cards and you'll go move, move, fight, fight, move, fight, fight, move, some combination thereof. And that all is pretty simple, but you are always limited in having to make these tactical decisions based on the cards that you've got. Now, that's all good and well, except everyone also has these wild cards in their deck. Now, wild cards allow you to do one of 3 things. The first thing is you can just play it, and that allows you to move any of your characters on the board. Whoop-de-doo, I hear you say. Second action is play it allows you to draw two cards. Well, that's good. There's no other cards that allow you to draw two cards. That's quite powerful. But the third action and the really interesting one is this interrupt action.
Ooh.
Now, the way this interrupt works is exactly as it sounds. Is say it's your turn, Mark, and you're going, I'm going to move, then I'm going to attack. In between those two actions, I, as an opposing player, have the option to go interrupt, and I play that card. Now, that stops your turn. Straight there, straight then, as long as you have had at least one action.
Yeah.
Then I get to do as many card actions as I can or want to do.
Wow.
So I could theoretically then drain my hand, attacking you, trying to put, you know, your plans into the bin, or attacking another player or doing whatever. And I could also then be interrupted by another player who choose to default, to break up my turn. Chaos. And someone else gets to go. Now, once the last player's interrupted action has been completed, then it will go back to your turn and you'll get to keep going until you decide to stop. Yeah. Now, that's really cool because you can never just sit back and let someone have their whole turn, because it doesn't take long for someone to get five crystals or five kills or some combination thereof. Yes. It doesn't take long. So you've always got to be involved. But the downside of the player doing the interrupt is that you're spending cards before your turn. When you're doing an interrupt, you don't get to draw those cards back. So you're going to start your turn with whatever cards you've got left. So you really want to pick and choose really carefully about when you want to do that. But I think that's a cool little mechanic.
And on your turn, you're drawing back some, but not all cards.
No, you're only drawing back a couple of cards every turn. Unless, of course, you choose to play one of those wild cards as a draw two cards. So it's essentially a draw one because you're spending one to draw two.
Yeah, okay.
But it's siphoning through your deck, and your deck's only 30 cards, so it doesn't take long for you to go through them all. It's just really cool and keeps everyone engaged. And the great thing is the board looks good, the minis look good, and it's quite easy to see who's fighting who, because like a lot of games, especially I guess the CMON games where they come with those little different coloured rings that go on the bases, you can easily see who's what. However, it's not easy to tell which symbols match which of your characters. So that was a bit of a complaint, is you'd look at your cards and go, okay, well, clearly I've got three of the, again, I'll just use the owl, three of the owl symbol and one of my big bad fighter and one of a little wizard. So I've got those cards in my hand. That all makes perfect sense. But how do I know which of those is actually the owl or the wizard or the this? Because some of the minis look quite the same.
Yes.
Had a chat to Martin about that, and he goes, that's probably the most common form of feedback, is it's just a bit hard to sort of figure out, you know, which cards match with which character. But so be it. We were able to figure it out. We're not that dumb, and we were able to make it work.
And that sounds like to me that's something not as a result of how Martin's designed the game, but the implementation of Osprey, where they've chosen perhaps the archetypes and the figures. Because, I mean, Martin wouldn't have been, I imagine, that involved in that process. I mean, talking about, you know, a fantasy sort of fantasy tropes, he is not known for his fantasy games,
Martin. That's true. And, look, interestingly enough, we were talking about this for that very situation. Yes. It's like, okay, well, what's this got to do? Where are the trains, Martin? Where are the trains? And he goes, well,
the ships.
Exactly. Oh, so when he was pitching this or having discussions with Osprey, he was actually pitching it as more of a, I'll say, an altered history kind of skirmish game, where you would have your team, and the game itself mechanically sounds almost identical, but your team would consist of various historical fighters and people. So you
from
might have
time periods.
Yeah, you might have your ninja person partnered up with a Spartan, partnered up with a African hunter. So you'd have all these various weird combinations, but again, sort of thematically in teams, I guess.
Yeah.
So you'd still have your melee fighters versus your range versus your wizardy types versus something else. But that was obviously, you know, taken on board by Osprey, and they went, no, we're doing fantasy fighting, Martin. So this
everyone
is how it's
going to loves
work.
The little fantasy miniatures. Yeah. Then you can take them, you can use them in your D&D game.
That's right.
Your Pathfinder game.
Yeah, and on that note, there's already an expansion called The Undead, which brings out, not surprisingly, an undead race. Now, what that does also bring out is two interesting things. First one is common activation.
Yeah.
So normally in this game, you play your cards and you get to activate that one particular person because you played a card that has that symbol on it. Whereas the undead, kind of like a hive, lack of mind, you just play them and all of the zombies, they all activate at the same time. So that's kind of different.
Mm.
But you also have the ability to have them basically be NPCs on the board as well. So they will get progressively more and more numerous on the board the longer the battles go on. So I haven't played with that. I think it would be really cool.
Yeah.
There are also meant to be a bucket load of expansions in the works, but what will come of that, who knows? But it seems to be that there is a plan for some longevity out of this,
which
is going to be great.
Certainly any game that is well and truly over in 60 minutes, yet is as dynamic as it sounds, I think is going to prove popular out there. I notice on the BGG page, they do say it's best with four, and it certainly sounds like it to be that you want as many people on the board as possible
for it
to be chaos. And there's also then lots of opportunities for killing.
Yep.
And there's more crystals to be able to pick up, and that in itself will speed up the game.
Correct. And that's really fun. It's also fun that you can gang up and steal kills, and you might try and do a big ranged attack that does 2 points of damage, but that leaves the person on 1 point of damage. So then they're then going to be a target because everyone else wants to steal your kill. Or it just, I think it just fits that really simple, fun, quick game.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't really matter if you win or lose because it's over and done with, and you've had some strategy and you've had some battles and you've gone, oh, I can't believe I did that, or oh, I didn't have the cards to do that, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really cool because, you know, when you're being attacked, you get the opportunity, if you've got the right cards in your hand, to defend yourself, which then might have got rid of some of the powerful cards from your opponent, which then makes them weaker, so someone else might try and gang up on them. It's got a lot of replayability. And because it is more than likely a 30 to 45 minute game, you can just reset in no time and just let's go again. Get a bit of revenge.
Yeah.
And it's cool. So it's good fun. I think Martin has done a very good non-Martin Wallace-y style game, and I would like to play it with you guys. Yeah. I think you'd really enjoy it.
Well, Martin and Osprey, if you're listening out there, we'd love to get a copy so we can play it down here. But that was Wildlands by Martin Wallace and Osprey Games. We'll take another break. And we'll come back shortly with more Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Hi, this is Ella from Ella Loves Board Games, and my favorite podcast is the Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there you go. That was Incubus with potentially Battlestar Scratchlactica or Battlestar Scralactica.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, it was Incubus. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark.
Garth.
For the final time this year.
Yes.
Would you like to present us with some
board gaming news? And what I think is one of the most exciting pieces of board gaming news to come out of the Christmas period, BorderCon 2019. Now, regular listeners of the show will know how much we love and enjoy BorderCon and how it gives us material to talk about for a large part of the year because it's just four days of gaming goodness.
Sure is.
We love it. Now, BorderCon have come out with their information for 2019.
Wow.
BorderCon obviously takes place in the Queen's Birthday long weekend, which this year is the 7th of June to the 10th of June. And they're going to be keeping a sort of a very similar format to what they have last year, in that there'll be a maximum 200 to 210 attendees. Now, 120 tickets will be offered up privately to a list of global gaming celebrities.
And hopefully us.
Or people who have been there before. Multiple times before, generally.
And how many years is this going to be for you, Mark?
Oh, I've lost track.
Yeah?
But I started before we started doing this show. We're in our sixth year of the show. It's either my sixth or my... I think it's sixth. I think it'll be six BorderCons.
Yeah, wow.
Or maybe seven.
Okay.
I'm not sure. That's some people have been going the whole, I think it's like 20 years.
Yeah, wow.
It's amazing. And, of course, it's held at the Hovel Tree Inn at...
Albury, not Wodonga.
Albury, not Wodonga. Now, how the tickets are working, on the 10th of January, not far away. The ticket offers will go out to those people on the priority list. They will have until 6 p.m. on the 24th of January as the deadline for accepting the ability to buy the tickets. Now, you still have to buy them, should be said. They're not free. You still have to buy them.
Absolutely.
But you've got that priority offer. Now, tickets that aren't accepted during the priority offer will be returned to the pool of available tickets for the general offer, which will go on sale at 8 p.m. on Friday, the 1st of February. Set your alarms, because the Bordercon organising team tell us they expect to have between 60 and 80 tickets available for the general public to purchase, and they do expect them to be sold within 2 hours.
Yeah, wow.
So, and you know, and I think the first time this happened, it was like 20 minutes almost.
If
it was
that,
crazy.
Yep. Yeah, it was madness. And that was, I think, a Saturday morning release. That was 2 years ago,
yes,
I think, when they first did this. And now last year, where I think the general sales went on for 8 p.m. Friday night and they didn't see Saturday morning.
Yeah, sure. Now they will have a waiting list because they do usually get a very small number of refund requests, and those tickets will obviously be able to go to the people in the waiting list. They're talking about maybe 5 to 20 is what they're saying, those refund requests. But there's not a lot of opportunity to get there.
No, there isn't. And this is, for any long-time listeners, clearly one of the Dice Men's favourite weekends,
yes,
and favourite gaming conventions in all of Australiandom.
But Garth,
what?
There's more.
Really?
Because we've just said how hard it is to get there.
It's so hard.
And how hard it will be to get tickets
for
two lucky listeners. They will have the opportunity to win tickets from us.
Yes, so
exclusively.
Yeah, look, it was fantastic because one of the very nice surprises I had when I was in Canberra, I feel like I've been talking about this Canberra Essen Unplugged as much as we talk about Moron. Neil was there, one of the lead organisers,
yes,
of Bordercon.
Hello,
and
Neil.
Again, for listeners, we did run a Bordercon competition earlier this year,
yeah,
and we were very, very happy to see that the tickets went all the way to the west coast of Australia.
That's right. Michelle and Brennan flew over from Perth for what was like a double birthday and anniversary sort of special treat for themselves.
That's right.
All the way from Perth for their very first Bordercon. We played a couple of games with them. They had the best time.
That's right.
Michelle was dressing up. They really got into it.
Yeah, fantastic. It was so lovely to meet those guys. And obviously, the entry that they had done was well worth it. So we'll have to come up with a bit of a competition. But yes, the Dice Men will have the only two tickets available to win in all of Bordercon history for 2019. So we're very excited to be a part of that.
Is very exciting news. Now let's move on to some less exciting news. A couple of things happening in the role-playing game world. Gale Force 9 has unveiled a new round of localized language editions on D&D 5th edition. So, listeners, if you are listening from Brazil, Poland, Russia, Dosvidanya, or Korea, they will debut in quarter 2 2019, so you won't have to get your English edition, you can get your local edition. Now, Gale Force 9 have been publishing D&D in French, German, Italian, Spanish. They were going to be doing a Portuguese edition for Brazil, but that got delayed. Now they've got Rebel PL, which is a great gaming company in
Poland.
K2. They've got Galapagos Yogos in Brazil, Hobby World from Russia, and TRPG Club in Korea to bring out the D&D starter set, the Player's Handbook, the Monster Manual, and the Dungeon Master's Guide in those native languages. And they'll be doing other things like DM screens and spell cards and things. That's all very exciting.
That's really cool.
Now, Paizo, they've got their upcoming Starfinder Beginner Box coming out in April, on the 24th of April. Now, their Starfinder Beginner Box is an entry point product for new players of Paizo's science fiction role-playing game. So it features streamlined rules for character creation and information about the Starfinder setting. The final version will include a 96-page hero's handbook with the rules of the game and character creation, along with a solo adventure and a 96-page game master's guide with a full adventure, rules for aliens and advice advice on how to run the game. Also included, of course, a set of 7 polyhedral dice, 80 full-coloured pawns representing heroes and aliens with 24 plastic bases, 6 pre-generated characters, 6 additional blank character sheets, 6 player aid cards, and a double-sided reusable playmat.
Woohoo!
You can draw on with markers. MSRP for the Starfinder Beginner Box only $39.99.
There you go.
It's exciting news for Starfinder. It has really been running hot.
Yeah, it has been. Because Leon and I played a little bit of it for PAX 2 years ago.
Yeah.
All we did was a very simple 1 hour introductory session, but it was really good fun. I can see why a lot of people will get into this one.
Yeah, and for those who have never heard of it before, it's obviously the sci-fi setting using very similar rules to the Pathfinder one.
Yeah.
Now, Mattel out, Spin Master in for DC. So DC Comics have dumped Mattel as the producer for their DC Comics Boys Action category toys, remote control and robotic vehicles, other things, but mostly important for us, games. Now, you might remember Spin Master. We talked about them when we talked about Hail Hydra. They have produced that game. They've also produced a 5-Minute Marvel. And those games have been very good and had a lot of success. So it's going to be interesting to see what games they produce for DC. Mattel's stock plummeted when this was announced.
Really?
Yes.
That's enormous.
I don't know the amount that it plummeted.
Good thing I don't have Mattel shares.
Yeah. Now, more board gaming news. Greater Than Games has acquired Nevermore Games. Now, you say who? Well, Nevermore Games, they had a game called Dark Dealings, which was on Kickstarter. They've recently had another expansion for that one called Dark Dealings Dwarven Delve. And they also have the Chicken Caesar title that has heaps of different expansions.
Sure.
So that's been taken over by Greater Than Games. Greater Than Games are also releasing another game by Storm Chaser Games called Medium. It's not a large. Okay. But players
pair up. Is it based on the amazing TV show?
I'm
from
not
years
sure.
And years ago?
Players pair up and work to form a psychic link. So it's like the psychic mediums.
Okay.
And each player will select a card from their hand and play it at the same time as their partner. The duos will read the words and silently concentrate on the word that connects them. Then they attempt to say the word, so they're going to transport it telekinetically into the brain of the other person. But, of course, often it won't match, and then you'll go on. So players select the new set of cards, and you're attempting to mind meld.
Really?
Garth, are you getting the word that I'm thinking?
Is the word garbage?
No.
Oh, okay.
It'll be interesting.
That makes it sound like kind of like
Codenames,
a whole bunch of people playing two-player The Mind.
Yeah, something like that, or code names without the clues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
anyway,
got to be something more to that. Otherwise,
we'll see what it's like. That's coming out in the second half of 2019. Now, Smirk and Laughter, which is an imprint of Smirk and Dagger Games.
I was going to say, that sounds awfully like Smirk and Dagger.
With Kurt Covert at the helm. They will release We Need to Talk. It's an intervention party game that addresses problems without actually saying what they are. So players act as concerned loved ones trying to broach the subject of an undesirable problem and making the target player guess what they're talking about. Running with scissors, always saying, that book was better than the film, eating only cylindrical foods, just as three examples, with 3 rounds of oblique clues. Now, all the problems have been screened for sensitivity, making it appropriate for all ages and social groups, and it has more added family appeal because it does not rely on shock value like some other game we know for all its laughs. It's for 4 to 10 players, ages 14 and up, playing in about 40 minutes, planned to come out in late March for around about $30.
I'm going to call it now. People will get offended at something in this game.
Of course they will.
So,
but it seems
I don't
like
care
fun.
That there has been market research done for sensitivity. I guarantee you there will be some people who will have issues with some of the themes in this game.
Of course. But, you know, look, there are a lot of games out there that deliberately seek to offend people. So who knows? It sounds interesting anyway. Now, the next expansion for Rio Grande's Concordia Venus. I think I might have mentioned this in the update I gave about Essen expansions. That will come out. Venus, the expansion for Concordia, will release in January. Now, there's 2 versions. There's a version of the base game with the expansion built in that's also going to be released, as well as just the standalone expansion. Just the expansion, not the standalone. So Concordia Venus offers a new way to play the game in which participants pair up and work together while competing against up to two other teams. Success will depend on the ability of the partnership to coordinate harmoniously, much like what we do here at the Dice Men Garth. Now, in addition, the expansion has a new game variant for individual players and playing materials that allow a sixth player to play the game. The designer of the expansion is Matt Gertz, same as the base game.
Good.
It's fully compatible with all previous versions. The expansion itself will be about $40 US, or the game, which includes the expansion, will be about $80 US. And as I said, coming out in January, so very soon. A couple more quick ones. The Unlock series of card games from Asmodee and Space Cowboys, which is an escape room game that uses basically a deck of cards and an app. You look for clues. Now, they have announced three new ones. Unlock, Night of the Boogeymen. Unlock, Scheherazade's Last Tale. And Unlock, Expedition Challenger. The Night of the Boogeymen follows a child, William, who has been tormented by monsters.
Oh, dear.
From under his bed. Players need to fight off the monsters without waking William. Scheherazade's Last Tale takes place at the last moments of the classic story, where Scheherazade is about to tell the Sultan her last tale, but she's out of ideas and the scribe has gone missing. The players need to find the scribe and tell the final tale. An Exhibition Challenger involves a private investigator, a woman with a missing friend, and a valley of unseen monsters lost in time.
Dun, dun, dun.
And Rio Grande Games have just announced a new recharged edition of the classic Power Grid, which is the fifth edition
produced
in English.
Wasn't that just the deluxe edition a few years back?
Now, details are scarce. The publisher is promising all the strategy and fun of the classic first edition, but with some updates that improve the game.
Somehow.
Now, I did find that the renewed edition will have two different game boards, each with their own character, and furthermore, the manual contain various game rule additions and special rules for two players. So there you go. Even more fun and challenge than its classic predecessor. That'll be due out in 2019. And finally, look, I think I did mention this briefly in the last episode, and probably by the time you listen to this, this campaign will be finished. But Tainted Grail Fall of Avalon, being produced by Awakened Realms, it's got just over 24 hours to go. It is now clocked up over $7.5 million Australian dollars,
wow,
or over £4 million. It's got more than 36,000 backers, and it is now the fifth most funded board game ever, or tabletop game, and has the seventh most backers for any Kickstarter
Crazy.
Tabletop game. So it's surpassed Nemesis, which was also by Awakened Realms. It's passed Gloomhaven as far as dollars.
Yep.
It's almost as many backers as Gloomhaven. It's just about to take over Dark Souls, I think. And
yeah,
then it would
okay.
be like the fourth highest dollar-wise Kickstarter.
Wow.
So just crazy. I've backed it up. I've been following the updates that have come out almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited about this one. The only bit I'm not excited about is the fact that if I go for the one-wave shipping, I won't get it until May 2020.
Yeah, but you're not going to do that. You'll get it quicker. Well, let's hope so anyway.
Dollars-wise, it's very good value. That is all the news that I have.
Oh, thank you very much, Mark. Well, we better throw to one more song before we come back, and I can tell you about the games that I played during Christmas. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
Oh, I love this song. Excuse me, everyone. Just wanted to pop in and say hello. It's Mark here. And welcome all the new listeners. What I'd love for you all to do, if you haven't done it before, is jump onto iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever you think we're worth, it makes a big difference to helping us get the podcast out to all the people there who don't know about it already. Of course, we'd love you to support us on Patreon as well, and to share the love on all your social media feeds. But if you could do the iTunes review for us, that would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, back to the track.
Some people say we are bonkers for being here in the Edge Radio studio during the festive holidays. But hey, I say, the people out there, you demand it.
Well, we're also damn professional.
That's right. And we're also going to back announce that Dizzy Rascal was singing that song Bonkers here on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. And if you haven't worked it out, where the Dice Men cometh, at least two-thirds of us are. One-third of us is vacant. Correct. Leon, hope you're having a nice time in the
did you just
north
call Leon
Tasmania.
Vacant, did you?
That's probably the nicest thing I've said about him in a long time. Yes, he's away in the north of the state. Travel safely, Leon. We are thinking of you. We're also thinking all the fun games we've been playing and all the fun games yet to come, Garth.
That's right. So, look, tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. And the Dice Men have had quite a bit of partiness going on in the last couple of weeks.
We have.
As a lot of listeners may know, we do our Thursday night games after this particular show. We also generally have a Tuesday night gaming session, and then maybe if we're good to our partners, they'll let us out for another night, or sometimes not. But we've played quite a lot of party games recently, and it's a good time of year to be doing that because, whether you like it or not, a lot of us are surrounded by a lot more family and a lot more friends than we would otherwise be at other times of the year. So games are a good way to have chats and spend some time with people who you may not necessarily want to spend time with. So I'm going to start with a game that was the first game that I bought thanks to Tabletop, which was Suro.
Oh, yes.
Now, Suro, for those who don't know, is a 2-8 player tile-laying game where you're each, let's just say, playing competing dragons on the path to some fa-la-la. All you're trying to do is be the last dragon on its particular path.
Enlightenment, maybe?
Correct. But it legitimately plays in 15 minutes or less.
Yes.
It legitimately does play 2-8 players, although higher player counts are more preferable for me because you can get people going off their path earlier than you would otherwise.
Yes.
And look, it's very simple. Everyone starts with three tiles. The tiles have all got a whole bunch of squiggly lines on them. And simply, you'll be playing one in front of your dragon, which is your little token, and making an obligatory whooshing noise of your own choice, whether it be that or whoosh, or flap, 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 or whatever it is you want to make your dragon noise be. You will then make your dragon follow the line. And you will just keep going. You'll always have to play play a card in front of your dragon, move it forward, and that all sounds very sedate and very calming. And it is, until the board starts to fill up with all you other dragons, and then you'll be playing tiles that will not just move your dragon, but other people's dragons, and that's the game. You want to move your dragon successfully while moving all the other dragons out of the way, and ideally either running into each other, because as soon as a dragon and another dragon hit, they're both eliminated.
Yes.
Or the dragon needs to go to the outer edge of the board and just falls off into an abyss, presumably.
This game, one of the things, because I do love it, one of the things I love about it, though, it is it almost teaches itself, because you basically say, just pick a spot on the side of the board. You probably want to spread out a bit, but doesn't really matter.
Not at all.
Here's three tiles. Have a look at them.
They've all got squiggly lines.
They've got squiggly lines, but you'll see if you just sort of hold them together, every tile joins up with every other tile. It's just where the line takes you. So basically you're going to follow a squiggly line and your aim is to stay on the board and not run into someone.
To squiggle better than anyone else.
And, you know, the act of doing that, of literally setting up the board and handing out the tiles, virtually teaches the game
That's
for
right.
you. It's so easy.
And it is a party game because it plays a higher number. And it's definitely a game of two halves, because the first half is really typically the decision, do I go for the middle or do I hang the edge? And then you go, oh, I can't do my chosen strategy anymore. I've got to do the other thing now. And all these other dragons are in the way.
Yeah.
So then it becomes a tile off for survival, and it's so much fun. We played it several times recently. So Suro, fantastic game. Second game we played most recently, Skull. Mark, you want to do a quick what Skull is of you playing at home?
What Skull is a set of coasters, but you don't put your beer on them or your cider or your beverage of choice. You'll have four coasters each. Three of them will have a flower on one side, and the fourth one will have a skull. This game used to be called Skull and Roses because the other three were roses, but now they've become different flowers, and so it's just called Skull. The other piece you have is a little play mat that has two sides, And basically, you need to win two rounds. The first time you win, you flip your playmat over. The second time you win, you go, yay, I won! The playmat is just used to keep track of how many you've won.
Right.
But each turn, everyone will put out one coaster, either a flower or a skull, face down so you won't know. Then once everyone has one around, one out, you will then go round in player order, either placing another coaster, again, face down, or bidding on how many coasters you can flip over before you reveal a skull. Now, one of the key things is you have to flip yours over first.
All of yours.
That's right. So you, the bid will go round until basically no one wants to go higher or everyone's passed. So if there's six of us, obviously the most flowers you can, there might be anywhere from 6 to 12 coasters, depending on how many times you've gone round placing coasters before someone started the bid. But it's a simple matter of saying, okay, I've got two, I flip them. Oh, look, two flowers. Garth, you flip one of yours. Yep, a flower. Leon, Leon. And Leon flips his over and it's a skull. I've failed. When I fail, I lose a coaster randomly. Leon, because he made me lose that dirty bastard. He gets to choose. So I might lose my skull even.
That's right.
Or I might lose one of the flowers. But if I win, I flip my player mat. I have to do that twice to win. So you can get knocked out if you lose all your coasters. But again, it plays so quickly. And as I said, it's like poker without the cards, because it's all bluffing, reading people, and will I raise the bid? Do I want to get stuck with the bid? Because I actually put out my skull and I want to make sure someone bids past me. So quick, so fun, so easy.
Exactly.
You can play up to six. You can even combine two sets together and play up to 12.
There you go. Another game we played lately, Zombie Dice. Now, there's a lot of zombie games around here, but very rarely do you actually play the zombies. Usually you are playing the zombie killing people, but not this one. You are zombies in Hunt for Brains. This is kind of zombie Yahtzee, not surprisingly, in the name of it. You will take three dice. You will roll them. You want to roll as many brains as possible. First to 13 brains will win. If you roll brains, that's good. Stick those dice aside. If you roll feet, footsteps, you get to re-roll them. But if you roll shotguns, roll three of those and you are out for that particular round. It couldn't be simpler. Roll some dice, have some fun, get some brains. And if you are, like us, good friends of Bo, he used his 3D printer to make these cool little brain tokens.
Yes,
they were
cool.
Awesome. There's a whole bunch of expansions, like a massive, what was it, a D12 or a D20?
Yeah, the school bus.
The big yellow school bus. That was cool. So, yeah, Zombie Dice was a lot of fun. We've also done Bang the Dice game lately.
Yeah, that was
where
cool.
Where you roll some dice, and it's just a slightly different version on Bang the Card Game, which is one of the first games I ever bought.
Mm.
We've done Werewords quite a lot, which is werewolf mixed with words. I also, my little niece, got Unstable Unicorns for Christmas. Now, she's five, maybe six, and we were around at my parents-in-law, and she just wouldn't shut up about, can we play this, can we play this, can we play this, and everyone said, no.
Everyone said, Garth, you're the games person.
So I read the rules, and I went, okay, and then I don't know how it plays, because all we did is we flipped it over, and I basically taught it to her like it was Snap. So if two dot things were the same color, then surprisingly she won, because the game was resolved after all the cards were done by a rock, paper, scissors, and she won the rock, paper, scissors. So I'm presuming that's how it plays. It was good fun. But the other thing we did was Jackbox TV.
Oh, yes.
Which is basically through a PlayStation or an Xbox or something, you use your phone as a little controller, and it's got a whole bunch of little party games.
Yeah.
So Fibbage, where everyone on their screen will be given an obscure fact with a keyword missing out of it.
Yes.
So it'll be the battle of, you know, da-da-da in 1942 was won because of blank. You've got to create an answer that is plausible yet wrong. You will get points for every other player who chooses your answer to be the right one. You'll get points for choosing the right one. There's other things like Drawful, which is kind of like just drawing games. It's all good fun. And it was really cool. We killed hours playing that until
fantastic.
Basically our phones all ran out of battery. But that was it. We've done lots of those, plus so many more.
Oh, awesome. There's so many great games to play over this holiday period. Now, we're going to be back in a week's time.
Games of the year!
All three of us to count down our games of 2018. Woo! Until then, drive safely, enjoy your post-Christmas beverages, and have a lovely time.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.